Hello and welcome to Reality TV. We made it through another week of quarantine, so a round of applause for all of us. I just have to say that first and foremost. And also, happy belated Mother's Day to all of the mothers and soon-to-be mothers, aunts, grandmas, any other maternal unit. Way to go. You did it. Round of applause. Now, let's talk a little bit about 90 Day Fiancé before the 90 days in terms of what happened over this last week or weekend. If you have been living under a rock, you may not have heard that 10 hours of the tell-all footage was leaked as it was happening in real time all over the internet. A lot of Instagrammers and bloggers were following along and posting this link, and Sharp Entertainment lost their shit because, you know, this is like top secret stuff. Everyone who watched the 10 hours of footage said it was just absolutely insane. Sean Robinson, the host, is laughing and crying at certain points. Ed and Lisa go at it. David lashes out against, I guess, almost everyone. I have not seen the 10 hours of footage. I know I can find the link on Reddit, allegedly. Is that bad that I'm saying that? Anyhow, you can go and find the footage yourself. It's not that difficult. Or you can go and see the timestamps that I forgot which Instagram account it was. I want to say it was like 187 Anonymous. Go look it up or go look in the Reality TV Orchard of Snark Facebook group. I posted screenshots of it. This Instagram account watched the whole thing and put timestamps of all the important details. So you can go look at it, you can study it like an outline, and then watch along as TLC edited it down to, what, 2, maybe 4 hours of footage? We'll have to see how long they make those tell-alls. Also, the new season of 90 Day Fiancé The Other Way was supposed to premiere on June 1st, if I remember, because that's how I put it in my calendar. Can tell how many wonderful events are coming up in my future. But it got moved to June 8th, I saw, when they were promoing it during the commercials this week. So who knows what's going on with that? Maybe they got some extra good footage out of that 10 hours. They needed to extend it a week. Now, I'm going to lighten your week quite a bit here because I found a great new show, or at least new to me. Now, I love Border Patrol shows, and there's quite a few of them on Netflix, especially that take place in the UK and New Zealand. I actually love those the same, if not more. But I found a new one that is on, and hear me out, it's on the National Geographic channel. But trust me, it's not like an elephant documentary or anything, although those are kind of cute too. But this show is called To Catch a Smuggler. I found it because my son and I are obsessed with Border Patrol shows, and, you know, we like this search for justice kind of thing. But this show, To Catch a Smuggler, is different than a lot of those other Border Patrol shows you see that are actually on the border of, you know, Mexico and the U.S. or Canada and the U.S. This show is in airports, primarily LAX, Miami, and JFK, if I remember correctly. And the things that people are trying to smuggle in and out of airports are mind-boggling. I mean, of course, you're talking about drugs, but food, plants, seeds, cigarettes. When they're seizing these things from the passengers, it is thrilling. And in To Catch a Smuggler, which is a weird title, just doesn't roll off the tongue properly, you get to see the customs agents from the point where they're greeting passengers as they're exiting the plane. You know, oh, can I just see your passport for a moment? And then you see those same officers who seemingly just say hello and pass people off like, okay, good enough. You see them go, you know, behind a pillar or something, and they signal to their cohorts that there's a suspicious person. And then you see it down the line in real time. They're asking those passengers questions, and then they take them to the side. They start searching their bag, and sometimes they get a hit, right? They'll find some illegal food being smuggled in, especially fruit, because we go into even the signs of bugs and that kind of stuff. It's amazing. I know it sounds crazy, but hear me out because we're going to get really, really deep and dark here. So normally that's where most shows end. They get the drugs or the food or whatever's illegal. They find the people, or they'll say, oh, they pass them off to whatever agent, and then it ends. But not my new favorite show, To Catch a Smuggler. Agents take these people who were just searched and questioned, and they bring them to the back. And we're talking cartel-level stuff sometimes. If there is a suspected mule, they'll take them to a special x-ray room where A doctor actually works at the airport. Who knew? They lay him down on the table. They take an x-ray. And in the x-ray, they can either see drug pellets they've swallowed, and some of them are the size of a pop can. And other times, they swallow condoms that are filled with, can you hear that I just knocked my LaCroix cans? But these condoms, they'll fill with liquid drugs, tie them off, and somehow people swallow things this size. I have no idea how they do it. But here's the thing. If they don't have any drugs in their system and there's no other cause to arrest them, they'll just let them go. But if they are a mule and they have drugs in their system, they make the people go inside what looks like a sound booth. For those of you who had hearing issues when you were younger, I had tubes in my ears. It was like one of those booths where you would go in and they would put the headphones on you and they play a sound. You like raise your hand right or left wherever you hear the beep in your ears. All right, I'm going really deep here. Anyhow, what I'm trying to say is there is a state-of-the-art toilet booth where they can see the person going to the bathroom on this metal toilet. And then as they poop, there's water jets just shooting in and it sanitizes whatever comes out. It's like a little gumball machine. The pellets or the liquid condoms or whatever just drop out like pling, pling. It's all rinsed off. It's all clean. And they can measure the drugs and figure out what's in their system. But it's still not over. I'm telling you, the show goes really deep. So now we have our person. We have whatever they are smuggling in. Then we have HSI come down, Homeland Security Investigators. They come down and they start questioning these people. And you see the entire process from start to finish. And at the end of each episode, you get to see if the perps spent federal prison time and how much they got or whether they got released. And one time, one of these couples that were mules smuggling stuff in, they, I guess, snitched on the cartel because they later went into the witness protection program. I can't recommend this show enough. You will be hooked, I promise, once you see them sample some of those drugs. Like they'll dig their knife into the packet and they place them in these little tiny drug packet tester things. I don't know how to describe it. It looks like one of those teeny tiny Ziploc bags, like the ones you get, I don't know, earrings or something in. They shake it in there and then they pop some sort of an activator and they flick it with their finger. Oh, I think it's got to be the visual equivalent to ASMR. Oh, one quick observation though. I kept telling Dave as I was watching this that I really think I missed my calling. I went into the wrong major because I would be so into this job. This would be my passion. I would live it, breathe it. I need to get into it somehow, some way. But I couldn't do the interrogating part because that's where I'm a wimp. I know that I would end up letting everyone off I question because in real life, I'm actually a softie and a true empath when I'm not ripping Big Ed and Steffi a new one. But I would live for calling supposed employers or digging into people's stories to see if they're lying or not. Like if someone went in there and said, my aunt lives in Sarasota and I'm going to go visit her. Okay, Sarge, give me 12 minutes and I will have this aunt's former and current address, their best friend, and where they spent last Thanksgiving. But like I said, the reality is I would never be able to sleep at night because I would want to take home every single person that came in there. I'd be calling up Kathleen Zellner, the Innocence Project. Hey, I have someone that you need to defend. I'd be terrible at it. So in saying that, I promise I'm getting to a point. I started pitching this job to Dave so that I could get the perks of knowing all this stuff that was going on without having to get emotionally involved myself. However, that would never work because I would get Dave fired or he would dump me, filed for divorce, because I would be calling his ass all day long. I would want to know every single detail of every person coming through there. And new perps, what country are they from? Did you test their pee? Did you test the drugs? Anything concealed? Who's questioning them? Are they hungry? Did you guys feed them? Why aren't you going to x-ray? I mean, it would be horrible. He'd be hanging up on me. It would be a disaster. And this, of course, is where I'm going with this. It opens a whole other door of my imagination and curiosity because, you know, along with these Border Patrol shows and Dateline and murder mysteries, I love a stakeout. I love them so much, I could watch someone else on a stakeout for hours on end. And most of the stakeouts on To Catch a Smuggler are several hours long, sometimes days, because, well, I guess I kind of forgot this part. I told you the show goes really deep on all different fronts. The show also follows parcels getting shipped in and out of the U.S. So often, if they have drugs with them, they will then call HSI, who can follow the package. Like, they'll keep sending it on. They won't seize it. They'll send it on to the intended recipient, and then HSI will go on this planned delivery. They'll stake it out. I told you, totally satisfying. And then they find out who the bad guys are, and they have the couriers do the drop-off. They give them a deal. Okay, so back on target here. Think about this, ladies, or men with possible prostate issues. You know why I think we see mostly men doing stakeouts 99% of the time? Because men can pee wherever and whenever the hell they want. Or even think about these people questioning all the people coming through customs and border patrol. Most of those agents are men. And you know why? Because they can drink all the coffee and all the Red Bull they want. And all they have to do is slip around the corner and pee by a dumpster or run down the hallway really quickly and probably not wash their hands after they pee because guys just don't. Most women cannot do that. Think about this. You're on a stakeout. You cannot just sit in a car for 7 hours, drink all the coffee you want, and go pee behind a dumpster unless you have superior quad strength and a supply of toilet paper that you can find a place to throw it away. I'm certainly in the demographic that would have an issue with this. I'd have to pee at least 8 to 12 times in a 7-hour stakeout. I'm the type of person that thinks I need to pee right after I just peed. And I don't have an infection. I just have a really small bladder and I drink a lot of coffee and water and maybe vodka tonics. But my point remains, stakeouts are misogynist. I love them. I respect them. I want to participate in them very, very badly. But I think women should be able to wear diapers without shame so that we can do the job too. Because let's be honest, in general, women are more observant to details than men. And I think we would rock these jobs out. We would rock the shit out of that stakeout. So that's all I have to say about that. Oh my God, it's been almost 15 minutes. Have I been talking about that show this long? Yeah, go ahead and watch it, To Catch a Smuggler, and then let's talk about it more. Now, on Patreon this week, if you would like to talk more or hear me talk more, it is Teen Mom OG Crossover Week with Amanda from Amanda Loves to Hate Teen Mom. That's patreon.com/realitybpod. This week on Total Request Podcast, My 600-Pound Life, Stephen Asante, Part 2. We did Part 1 last week. Also last week, we did 2 episodes of Newlyweds, Nick and Jessica. For the main episode this week, again, you're getting 2 episodes every single week. One of them, a request from you, the listeners, Total Request Podcast. The other, a bonus episode that Amanda and I are assigning each other in the spirit of quarantine togetherness. So as long as this thing's going on, we'll keep giving you some shows, some throwbacks to watch and snark about with us. This week's request is Vanderpump Rules, Season 1, Episode 1. Amanda and I are brand new to this show. It's a first for both of us, so it should be pretty interesting. That is at patreon.com/trpod. Thank you to my newest Patreon subscribers who are sponsoring this episode right now for 90 Day Fiancé Before the 90 Days. That's Danita, Jennifer, Andrea, Lorelai, Jennifer, and Christine. Thank you guys. Welcome to The Baddest Apples. And with that, let's get into the latest episode of Before the 90 Days, starting with Stephanie. This bitch. I did not think it was possible for me to spy Stephanie any more than I did last week, but alas, it's happened once again. She is using, and I'm going to put this in quotes here, coming out, because, I mean, jury's out whether she is actually gay or bisexual, because she's certainly not acting that way. And hopefully you understand what I'm saying. She's just using this coming out story as a ploy to get famous. Can we at least all agree on that? And that is what pisses me off, because it's downplaying the actual real difficulty and angst people who are gay or bisexual or trans or whatever experience when they come out to their families. And the reason I have doubts about Stephanie's sexuality, and I really don't care about anyone's sexuality, as long as you're a good person, I don't care who you're sleeping with or not sleeping with at night. But when Stephanie said to Erica, I wrote down the quote, "I want to introduce you to my mom because I know this is really important to you." Or someone who is genuine would say, "I want to introduce you to my parents because it's important to me." She's such a narcissist. I can't stand her. And bringing Erica in, much like what Erica says later, to break her heart to further her own agenda is unconscionable to me. I don't understand that. This bitch tells Erica that she's going to tell her mom about her, which would legitimize Erica, you know, acknowledge her as a person with feelings, a person worthy to bring home, if you will. And what does Stephanie end up doing? She says, "I have a secret to tell. I swam with sharks." And then she turns to Erica after she hangs up and does not even apologize. It's almost as if she wanted Erica to apologize to her for some reason. She doesn't say to Erica, "Oh, I'm sorry I chickened out. That was such bullshit. I can't believe how brave you were when you did the same thing yesterday. I should call my mom back. I'm so, so sorry." Nope, none of that. She just looks at Erica and says, "Yeah, oh, that was so tough for me." Really, Steph? That was tough for you? How about Erica, who actually did come out to her parents yesterday? She actually did the thing, so she knows it was tough, you spoiled frickin' bitch. Now, the party at Erica's friend's house was so beyond uncomfortable that I had to watch it, you know, behind my hands because all of Erica's friends so clearly hated Stephanie, and Stephanie had no clue at all. And as much as I dislike her, I can't deal with that sort of anxiety because she walks in there with zero social awareness, acting like she's all easy breezy and, "Can I have a drink?" First of all, okay, rude, maybe say hello first. And second of all, why is Stephanie seeming to be 10 years younger than everyone else, but she's actually 10 years older? It was like watching a wannabe MILF cozy up to her daughter's guy friends or something, you know, like, "Hey guys, ever heard of White Claw? OMG, amazeballs. No, go home, grandma." Thankfully, that's exactly what's going to happen because shit went down at the hotel the next morning. Stephanie wakes up, puts on her stupid kimono robe that I am embarrassed to say that I actually liked when she first put it on. But now Stephanie's just bitch eating crackers to me. She has the audacity to get mad enough to throw a fucking ceramic bowl right at Erica. Let's not be mistaken. She didn't just take it and toss it to the side. She flung it towards the bed, towards Erica, because Erica dared to have a relationship before she even knew Stephanie existed. Once again, does Stephanie want Erica to have saved herself for the woman coming into her future, posing possibly as bisexual, in order to come to Australia to not sleep with her, barely kiss her maybe once, not come out to her family, and then apologize for nothing? What is Erica at fault for here? I cannot wait for this tell-all, which, again, there's a lot of chatter about online. I didn't hear too much about Stephanie, but Stephanie better get her flat, wannabe, visco, middle-aged girl ass handed to her, roasted in a super glue together porcelain bowl, or I'm going to be pissed. I'm going to need a White Claw after that. Okay, let's talk about Avery and Ash. And I'm going to ask you to put your Ash morning meditation namaste hands together and go on a journey with me because I think we can all relate to this. I think I found out Ash's problem. It's been many a week here in quarantine, and most of us who have human emotions and tendencies to perhaps eat a little bit too much during this time, we've been overindulging, and I myself have noticed that my pants in particular, my jeans, have been fitting a little snug. And I'll tell you what, I went on a long walk the other day with Scout and I came back pretty irritable. I was wearing my tight jeans and this led me to think last night as I was looking at Ash's jeggings, how annoyed and irritable and pissy, lashing out at people I would be if I had to wear those jeans, botching a presentation at work in front of an entire camera crew because my jeans were tight, couldn't get anything to go my way. That's what I think's going on with Ash. I think he bought the jeggings. He wanted them to loosen up, but no matter the amount of lunges that he was doing up and down the stairs like we all do, no matter how many squats you're doing in your bedroom, you can't get them to loosen up. That is Ash right now. Girl is like a frustrated Kathy cartoon, but instead of cats all around him, it's like misaligned chakras and healing crystals and shit. And instead of the squiggle lines around his face, it's like just bug eyes. I think he's having a really rough time, and I think it all comes back to the pants. And if you noticed, when Ash was wearing a little bit looser black leggings at his ex-wife's house, he was markedly less bitchy. I mean, he loosened up enough to give his son a possible shout-out on his Instagram. Cool. Something about that comment made me feel like Ash does not actually spend the amount of time that he says he does around his son. I mean, bragging about your Instagram to your kid, your young kid, what is he, 5 or 6? Ew. I mean, what would an actual therapist say to that, for real? That you are looking to your son to get validation that you're popular and cool and Instagram-like worthy? If I were Avery, that comment would have sealed the deal for me. Or I would have just grabbed Ash's ex like a freaking hostage and been like, let's get to that wine bar. You've been through some things. So have I. Let's pino this out together. Hashtag resist. And it seems actually like that's really what ultimately happened. Two strong women, single moms, they want the best for their kids. And listen, they had a civilized, constructive conversation, which Ash would only dream would happen. But, you know, how would he ever predict two rhombus brain women talking together? They're both outside their boxes. They need a man to help them organize all these crazy emotions they have. Asshole. But obviously, they both agree that Ash is not always realistic and or completely truthful. And I can only hope that Ash's ex rips him a new one when she hears that Ash has not been completely truthful about the timeline of their divorce. All right, let's move right along because otherwise I'm just going to be singing Avery's praises from here till the end of the episode. All right, David and Lana. Well, David is legitimately crazy. Show aside, the guy is a creep. He's got the glare in his eye, the Matrix wannabe trench coat mafia leather jacket. I mean, what the hell is that? The guy just does not give up on anything. The fashions from the whatever decade it is that he's living in and his obsession with women. Even Julia Roberts' husband in Sleeping with the Enemy, which is the number one creepy guy I go to in my head whenever I think about stalkers, even he would have said, screw it. You know, I can straighten my own towels. Serial killers have left victims to identify them if they were to ever get caught. But nevertheless, David is still persisting with Lana. And I hate that Keeve is getting drawn into 90 Day Fiancé stuff because Keeve has had quite a year. It is now known more for David stalking its streets than what went down there in our own corrupt government. Marie Yovanovitch is screaming so loudly right now, I can hear it in my soul. David is back in Kyiv to skin Lana alive. Oh, I'm sorry, to meet Lana because, you know, somehow they started talking and they hooked up. Yeah, spoiler here. Well, this is an alleged spoiler that I saw this morning on Instagram. Supposedly, Lana was on all these different dating sites, and the production company started telling all these different sites that David was going to sue all the different sites if Lana didn't meet with him. And so they forced Lana to meet with him so that he wouldn't sue. And who knows if this is true or not, but the bottom line is David was, is, and forever shall be a freaking creep, a stalker, because he went there no matter what. No matter whether this they're going to sue or he's going to sue situation is based in reality or not, he flew across the country to Ukraine. So there he is arriving on a Friday to meet Lana, but she can't make it because, what do you know, there's a big hockey tournament in Kyiv and her nephew needs her to be there. What's she supposed to do? Not show up and cheer him on using very liberal Instagram filters? Well, David is not happy about this, and we know that because he closes his laptop with a little Humph, I'm not happy. Davy not happy. Oh, gross, pathetic man. So pathetic that he goes back to the PI. Remember the one he berated last week? The one that he called out, you're fired? He calls the guy back and hires a translator that you know he had TLC pay for, or Sharp Entertainment pay for. And he calls them to this restaurant. Of course, not the one where he embarrassed the shit out of himself. He has the two of them sit down and he wants to find out where not only Lana is, but now Lana's sister. So let's be clear. This is not even about whether Lana is real or not. This is about David wanting to know the latitude and longitude where he is now going to stake out. Well, this is one stakeout I would not want to be on, where he's going to stalk down his intended prey's family. Wouldn't you know it, though, the PI was not able to give him that information because it didn't go so well. If you had two ears and two eyes, or maybe even following along on the closed captioning, you would know that David looked like a fool, but he thinks he came out on top with a, you're fired. Ooh, sick burn, Dave. Now, at the very end of the episode, we see David waiting outside in his disgusting gold shirt from 1989. Maybe a St. John's Bay Dockers from Kohl's. And he's waiting for Lana. And finally, she arrives. The actual Lana, which no way in hell is she in her 20s. I'm sorry. She's 40 if she's seen a day. And we'll find out more about that at the tell-all from what I've heard. Now, Ed and Rose. I'm going on the record right now that Rose needs to release a breakup anthem as soon as possible, because everyone would forget who the hell Soulja Boy was if she did that. Rose slayed that breakup. She killed it. If you ever watched The Soup on E! Way back in the day with Joel McHale, remember that clip of the guy doing the newscast going, and boom goes the dynamite. That's all I had playing in my head over and over again as she just handed his ass to him, just like I hope they hand Stephanie's ass to her. She put Ed in his place like every woman or man should be able to do if they've been dating someone who's been treating them like shit. Before Ed could get his little teeny tiny feet that were dangling off that chair to the ground to run away, she told him everything wrong with himself. And hell yeah, he was shocked. I was shocked that he was shocked. Ed just assumes because he's American that he's a gift to Rose. And that's exactly what she was trying to convey to him, that he has been looking down on her, being condescending this entire time. Ed hasn't tried to prove anything to Rose. He's just been looking at her as an object, not someone with feelings or a life. It might not be the life that Ed is living, but it's her life. She has a child. She has ambitions and goals. And let's remember, Ed never spent any time with Prince. So I am so glad that Rose brought that up because that is a huge point. You want her to move to another country with her child, but you can't be bothered to spend an hour with him. Rose can absolutely do better, infinitely better. And she does not need the United States of America or a green card to complete her. God, seeing Ed blindsided was so satisfying. And if that means I'm a bitch, so be it. I still think that Taylor Swift, Beyonce, Kelly Clarkson, anyone, Kelly Pickler, someone call Rose's people because that lady has got a hit on her hands. All right, you guys, well, that does it for this week's episode. As always, thank you for listening. Please head on over to iTunes. Leave me a 5-star written review if possible. Really helps me out. Head on over to patreon.com/realitytvpod for bonus episodes and all the other previous bonus episodes. I think I'm at almost 120 by now. And Total Request Podcast, patreon.com/trpod for all of the shows that you request. You want them, we watch them. And until next time, take care of yourself, stay home, but most of all, stay salty.